talking all things wound care. This is The Pressure Effect, brought to you by Smith & Nephew.
Welcome to The Pressure Effect from Smith & Nephew. I'm your host, Dr. Lee Rutze. This season, we're taking a closer look at pressure injury prevention in special populations. Today, we'll be discussing device-related pressure injuries in the critically ill population. Joining us today is Dr. Kelly McPhee, who is past chair of the Board of Directors at the American College of Clinical Wound Specialists. Together, we'll explore what these injuries are, why they happen, and strategies to protect our most vulnerable patients. Welcome, Dr. McPhee. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So our listeners might be familiar with you if they've listened to your previous episode, but for those who are not familiar with you, could you start just by telling us a little bit about your background and your work with critically ill patients?
Sure. So I am a family nurse practitioner by trade. I am a DNP at this point. I have been in wound care specifically for a handful of years and have served as the director of wound care for a hospital in rural Northwest Missouri. That is where I have spent a good amount of my time working with the critically ill patients, specifically during COVID, where we spent a lot of time working with medical device-related pressure injury prevention in the ICU.
Perfect. So today's topic revolves around medical device-related pressure injuries. So tell our audience a little bit about the fundamentals of medical device-related pressure injuries and how they differ from traditional pressure injuries.
Well, the mechanism of injury is still due to pressure. I think the differentiating factor, of course, is the presence of the medical device. And so in this regard, we have patients who are in the hospital generally, because that's where a lot of our medical devices are found, with either, let's say, a nasal cannula or a Foley or some kind of gastrointestinal, like a PEG tube or something like that, that is situated so that we are having extra pressure. Or I see a lot of CPAP injuries, BiPAP injuries, things like that. So that's really the differentiating factor, is having that medical device in place and the pressure injury is the result of the device.
Got it. Does it remain true that the majority of medical device-related pressure injuries are due to one form of respiratory device or another?
I would say that the overwhelming majority of our medical device-related pressure injuries are due to respiratory devices.
Yeah, and of course, they're going to be more prevalent in the ICU population because there are more devices in the ICU population. We recently did a session on pediatric pressure injury and medical device-related pressure injuries. And of course, they are the most prevalent injuries in the pediatric population. So on average, how common would you say these types of wounds are in the critically ill population? I don't know if you can put a percentage to it, but anyway, take a shot at that.
Yeah. So we see them maybe a little less frequently now because we're aware of them and so we're trying to prevent them. But I was actually looking for some pretty specific data on this recently. There's a good meta-analysis that came out last year, so 2024, looking at, I want to say, 28 different studies of medical device-related pressure injuries globally, across the globe. And roughly just less than 20% medical device-related pressure injuries in the ICU.
20% of the total ICU population?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, the incidence was, I think, 19.3%.
Okay. Wow. And I think that you've already mostly answered this, but are there common locations where medical device-related pressure injuries tend to occur?
There are. I think we see them mostly on the face and, of course, associated with respiratory devices, on the lips, the mouth, and then also like on the fingers. Those pulse ox devices, especially the ones that have the tape, you'll see some sometimes on the fingers related to those as well.
Interesting. How soon can a device-related pressure injury develop after the device is placed? And I guess that depends, too, on how firmly the device is attached or what the pressure gradient is between that and the skin.
Yeah, and I think you just hit the key right there. It's all going to be patient dependent and dependent on the circumstances, but we've seen pressure within hours.
Wow.
But in many circumstances, it's just within a few days of being in the ICU.
So would you say If we're talking about the skin and not the mucous membranes or the lips, do these tend to present as deep tissue pressure injuries eventually, or what do they look like when you see the first sign of them?
I think for us and our population in the ICU, we do tend to see more deep tissue injury or deep tissue pressure injuries in the beginning initial stages, especially if we're looking at medical device related on the face.
Okay. And we spend quite a bit of time talking about the impact of truncal pressure injuries, sacral injuries, heels, so on and so forth. And we know what kind of an impact those can have and how long lasting that impact can be. What sort of an impact do you see with these particular device-related injuries on the patient's health and recovery?
It's a little bit of a different impact, especially if you're considering the location of the pressure injury. For example, if you've got a pressure injury that's developed on the patient's face, let's say it's across the face from a medical device, whether it's a BiPAP or something of that nature, this is a little bit different. It's not the same effect of having a sacral pressure injury because people see this. So I think that this has a little bit more of a psychological component to it. Your friends, your family, they're coming in to visit you and they're asking what's on your face. I just think that there's more of a psychological impact related to a medical device-related pressure injury.
That's an interesting perspective. Yeah, that makes sense. So now we've talked a little bit about the demographics and the prevalence and common locations. What strategies or best practices can we as clinicians use to prevent these device-related injuries?
So something that we utilized in my facility, resulting, well, born out of COVID, really, aside from education, because I think we're all using a lot of education, copious amounts of education, we put together a pressure injury bundle. So it was a packet of dressings, and it was designed for medical device-related prevention, but also pressure injury prevention. And it came with, of course, the education that would come along with this. But we made this easy. It was a grab and go. So you grabbed your packet, you put on the dressings on the face to prevent from medical device related. And then you also had your standard dressings for heels and sacrum. And so we made this just super simple. You grab it with your admission packet, you placed it on your patients, and they were ready to go. And I think that made adherence to the process a lot easier. So compliance with nursing staff was simple because it just was found with everything else that you would get for your patient when you would get a new admission. So you grab all your supplies and then you grab your dressing packet. And it just made this process a lot more simple.
Wow, that's great. And simple is good, of course.
Exactly.
Always. So are thin silicone foams a part of that? Are hydrocolloids a part of that? Do you use skin prep or any sort of skin preparation liquids?
Absolutely. In the dressing bundle, and we actually used our dressing rep, she came and helped us assemble these packets. We would put the thin silicone dressings, so the bordered foam dressings, one for every location. They'd already been educated on where they were going to be placed. And then the skin prep. So everything's in that little packet and all ready to go. And then presumably the patient gets admitted and then they just apply all the dressings. And of course, that would be documented in the medical record and so on and so forth. But everything was just there. It was one-stop shop.
That is a remarkably nice approach. And oddly, it's the first time I'm hearing about this grab-and-go pack strategy. That's fantastic. So what sort of new technologies or device designs are there out there aimed at reducing this risk?
So I think that there's a lot of new technologies in wound care in general out there available and have been for a while. Some of the things that I'm most excited about, especially in pressure injury prevention or an identification of, would be like the SEM scanner, the subepidermal moisture scanner. I think that is huge in pressure injury identification or being able to identify a pressure injury before you can actually see it with your own eyes. So that's something that I think is really exciting in the pressure injury world. And I think you can use some of the new infrared technologies much in the same way to identify tissue that's being damaged much before you can see it with your own eyes.
Do you have any form of these technologies in your institution?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I think your point is really, really a good one because I think the literature is pretty strong about SEM scanning and some of the others for early detection, especially in people with darker skin tones when they're harder to see. The problem, of course, is budget, especially in the post-COVID era. These technologies are expensive, and it's tough to get the C-suite to believe that this is a good investment.
Definitely. You have to weigh that, the cost up front versus your cost savings, because there's changes coming with CMS. So can we prevent and getting buy-in that way?
Sure, sure. And, you know, not only in preventing patient harm, but also preventing medical legal action.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that just about wraps up our conversation for today. But we have some time. If you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with the audience, anything that I didn't ask you about or anything that you'd like to cover that we didn't cover, feel free to share that.
Well, I just think that it's very important for us to be aware of the risk for pressure injury development in the ICU patient. Those patients have a host of risk factors for development of pressure injuries. And so it's something that we need to be cognizant of and to think about. Not only are they patients that may be on vasopressors, they may be intubated, ventilated, they may not be able to speak for themselves, certainly may not be able to reposition themselves, and have a long list of comorbidities. So we just need to take into fact that these patients are going to be high risk. They have low Braden scores. We just need to be focusing on that and then implementing appropriate pressure injury prevention strategies, whether it's for sacral inhaled pressure injuries or medical device related as well.
That is a perfect conclusion. Thank you. Well, Dr. McPhee, thank you so much for joining us. That was a valuable and very good conversation. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Pressure Effect. I want to say a big thank you once again to Dr. Kelly McPhee for joining us today and giving us the tools we need to better understand how to prevent medical device-related pressure injuries in the critically ill patient population. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating or review. I'm Dr. Lee Rutze, and I'll see you next time.